Construction Authority hearing. At this point, I'll ask the Secretary of this authority to call the roll.
Director Mawson?
Here.
Director O'Connor? Director Parks? Director Perry?
Here.
Director Rosenfeld?
Here.
Director Leahy?
Here.
Director Yaroslavsky? Chair Wesson?
Here.
A quorum is present.
Now, if we could get approval of the minutes. I got a motion, a second. Then, without objection, we are adopting the minutes from the December 2nd meeting. We've just been joined by Director Yaroslavsky. At this point, we are at, I believe, Madam Secretary, we are at public comment, correct?
Yes, public comment.
Okay. I thought I saw Mr. Simmons. Clint Simmons, please come forward. 3 minutes.
Well, I guess that's enough. I say Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year to you.
I hope that you had a good one, but mine has been miserable. Construction of this line. Okay, well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We have a severe noise problem that exists from Crenshaw Boulevard all the way to Dunsmuir, and this is something that we have been speaking about ever since the inception of this line. Comments have been made in the EIS ERA from the outset, and we are now beginning to experience exactly what we meant by that. Ever since the Oleana bushes was taken down, specifically the area west of La Brea, we have noticed an increase of about 10 decibels of noise that exists now from the traffic that's running on Jefferson up to that point. One thing I will say, I am glad the fact that Expo put some monitors outside of my house, so now you have a reference that we've been having all along as to how quiet the community is before this line came in. And when the construction of tracks, you have a foundation for the tracks. And so traffic that's running on Jefferson, as an example, and sound waves, you people know how they work, it's just a motion of the air. And it would be related to the ocean. As you see waves come in, and then you see white caps. White caps come as a result of the waves hitting something and cause it to bounce. For those of you who have been swimming or at the ocean, you know what I mean, someone hit the ocean. So that is what happened with sound. When you have the sound from the car, as it moving towards the tracks, elevator, it's actually in a raised platform where the tracks are put in, so the noise hit it, and then it bounces over. In the ERA, I noted that we use the term of echo chamber. What it is amount to a Doppler effect, and the walls that put up, so it makes that much more noisier. And then we have tall buildings that is north of the right-of-way, and they also get another ricochet, and this is a problem. So it has been noted in the ERA, so why wait until you get to that point before we try to do something about it. The other point is that the community is a little confused about the station at Dorsey High School. There have been rumors that there will not be a station. Some say it will be a station. There was an email sent to a board member of Mont that I got a chance to see where Gabriel, Ms. Collins, stated that the train going to stop whether there be a station there or not. So that is not what was put out. See, the train is going to stop even if it is a station. If it's not a station, I don't think that's what will happen in the community. To me, either way, it's still dangerous as far as I'm concerned. And I'm only relating what the community has a problem with here. And in this meeting here back in August, the chairman asked the attorney about that. He said that she was committed to that, but we won't worry about that at all. Another incident, the base level that you have, we had something like 40 dB of decibels that was monitored, and you have it on your, by your monitors there. And now we're up well over 50 and sometimes 60, and it all happened as a result of the traffic that's being passed on Jefferson Boulevard there. So, back in 2006 and 2007, raised this question. We had people from NASA as well as aerospace to look at this, and the Harris Company out of Massachusetts did a study for you in that case. I forgot the date, but I have one at home. And people were saying, don't worry about it. By the time it reached there, the people who was involved will be gone. And I made it clear to Mr. Thorpe that I would be with you until you get to Santa Monica. It's not going to be a long time before you get to Santa Monica, but I want you to get it right in phase one between downtown and out to La Cienega. And if you look at the prison track from 400 feet west of Vermont all the way to downtown, it's a complete different instruction that you have from 400 feet west of Vermont out to Culver City. It's a difference of day and night, and you don't have to be a genius to go look at it. Just drive down and you can see it. It's completely, as a matter of fact, not only will you be confronted with noise in the area from Vermont out to La Cienega, we will also have to be in trash that will be gathered on the track because we just have concrete cross ties and a lot of rocks that's in there. I consider it's a disgrace to the community. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think we can continue the way it is now and expect the community to be happy. It's completely disrupted.
And thank you.
Have a nice, yes,
thank
you,
Mr. Thorpe. And if we could put together, or Mr. Thorpe, I want to be able to respond to the community's concerns, in particular where it relates to the station and this concern where it relates to the tracks by Vermont. I know you and I had a discussion about that, but maybe there's a document or something we can put together.
Yes, sir, there's a bulletin was put out by ECU. You can go up online and get it on Fix Expo. Either I can email it to you. It shows each section identifying each pictures and all that's there.
No, I think you showed it to me.
Yes, I did. So it's not something that we're dreaming of.
No, I'm not. I didn't suggest that. But anyway, I just want to be able to respond. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for giving me a chance to speak.
All right. Now that brings us to...
Item 5, consent calendar.
Okay. Are there any objections to adopting items? I think the consent calendar is 5A through 5C. Okay, then without objection, that will be the order. That now brings us to...
Item 6A, Formville Station Contract Amendment.
Okay.
This attempts to address some of Mr. Simmons' concerns. It's regarding the Farmdale station. We're seeking authorization for a little over $1 million to do the preparations for the station in advance of bringing on a contractor to actually construct the station at Farmdale. And so what this does is basically three things. We wanted to take advantage of the opportunity over Dorsey High School winter break to do some work. We authorized that work under emergency in order to not further delay the project, so we will be ready to start construction of the station as soon as we get a contractor on board. So this work did all the preparation for that. It had storm drain work, conduit work, and other work. We're also asking for $500,000, which is part of that $1.1 million to finish some of the street reconstruction at Farmdale, again, in advance of constructing the actual station. And so this authorization is for $1.1 million to do the pre-construction infrastructure work preparation for adding the station at Farmdale.
How long do you think it'll take before we acquire a contractor?
We're hopeful to come in February with a recommendation to the board to hire a contractor to construct the station.
And how quickly before they would begin construction if all goes according to plan?
They will have to first finish the design work, and then once that design work is done, they will then be able to start the actual construction work.
Okay. And this is all part of the... The cost is all part of the projection that we were given when we decided to build the station instead of the other?
That's correct. The funds are coming from that safety enhancement budget, which added the Farmdale station.
Okay, then without objection, we'll adopt the staff report on item 6A, Madam Secretary.
Item 6B, contract package A2, station electrical contract amendment.
This item, we're seeking authorization for $1.4 million, essentially $1,380,300, to finish off the station electrical and what we call package A or segment A, which includes stations at 23rd Jefferson and Vermont Station. So this would complete the work for those. It provides all of the station lighting and power requirements necessary to finish the station.
Okay, then without objection on item 6B, we will also adopt the staff report. Madam Secretary.
Item 6C, contract packages B2 and C2, sound wall contract amendment.
This item is to finish off the elements of the sound wall. Some of the quantities changed and the footing sizes changed, but primarily what it does is because of visibility concerns by both Metro and the Public Utilities Commission, initially our sound walls went all the way to the end of the street or the cross street. In discussions with them for safety visibility reasons, we were required to cut down those walls. We still need a sound attenuator, so we have designed now a plexiglass system that they'll be able to see through. It comes back about 350 feet from each intersection, so the operator can see as he approaches the intersection. We did this in Pasadena. It's worked very successfully, and we will be implementing that as part of the sound walls as well. In addition, the sound walls didn't have any texture on the back side of the wall adjacent to some of the streets that could be seen. So in some cases, the sound walls can't be seen. In areas where it could be seen, we worked with the contractor to put an architectural stamp feature on the back of the wall until the vines grow up and ultimately cover the wall. So this basically finishes all of that sound wall work at a cost of $587,519.
Okay. Any questions or concern? Seeing and hearing none on that item 6C, we will adopt the staff report. Madam Secretary.
Item 6D, contract packages A2, B2, and C2 fencing contract amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this item finishes off our fencing contract as well. This is the final design portion that went from 85% to the final plans. We had some additional quantities of fencing that we needed to install, as well as changing the fencing requirements to add an anti-climb feature. So it's a special fence that makes it very difficult for people to climb over. We used it very successfully on the Orange Line and wanted to implement that safety feature as part of the Expo project. So that's what this would do. It's what? It's a wire mesh fence that has a collapsible portion on the top of it. It kind of veers out.
Length of the Orange Line?
Yes. Yeah. It goes the length of, yeah.
It's green, right?
Yeah, it's green.
Okay. And without objection, I will adopt a staff report on that item. Ms. Yaroslavsky, who's the chair of the Board of Supervisors these days? Why, this chair is high. I'd break my neck if I fall out of it. Okay. Well, it's an adjustment, and I'm going to... Yeah. Yeah, 6 foot something. I'm 6'3", at least, maybe 4. Okay, Madam Secretary, that brings us to what?
Item 7A, Phase 2 design to build process.
All right.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is a receive and file. It's just to bring you up to speed on the Phase 2 contract and where we are and the procurement approach that we're using. Previously, I have discussed the first phase and the concept of what we're trying to do, and that was to narrow the number of contractors down to the two most qualified contractors.
Yes.
Each of those two contractors would then conduct preliminary engineering. At the conclusion of preliminary engineering, they would submit their final technical proposals and cost proposals, and we would select one of those then to move forward with the design and the construction of the system. Phase, what we call Stage A, or the narrowing the field to two contractors, was accomplished. They have both now finished preliminary engineering. On December 22nd, they submitted their final technical package and cost proposals. We are in the process of evaluating those, and basically it will be a what we call a best value selection. So it will be a combination of price and technical capabilities. We first evaluate the technical aspects of their proposals. Once that's done and points assigned for the technical portion, then we open up the cost proposals and look at the cost proposals, assign points associated with that, add the two together, and the one receiving the highest points is the what we call the best value selection. We have assigned, because we now are down to the point where the contractors can price the project based on their preliminary engineering, we have assigned a 85% out of 100% value to the price. So the price will be a significant portion of the selection process. But 15% will be assigned based on technical qualifications of the contractor and how they're going to approach the project, their schedule, the people they're going to utilize, the subcontractors they're going to utilize. So there is a possibility that the person or the firm providing the lowest overall price may not get selected because there is this technical. So if somebody was superior on the technical side and the costs were very close, it could provide for one contractor being the higher price actually being recommended as the best value to the authority. We have done this on numerous, well, I won't say numerous, but the Pasadena line was based on a best value procurement, and other projects have been done in a similar way. We think this is based on where we are, the best approach. We are in the process of evaluation. By the end of the month, we should have completed the technical evaluation and we'll be ready to open up the price proposals. Our goal then is to come back to this board in February with a ranking of the firms and a recommendation that the best value contractor providing the best value to the authority, be not necessarily awarded the contract. That would come later, but we would enter into negotiations with that contractor. Now, remember, before I had described that both contractors will be doing preliminary engineering, and the losing contractor, we would own their ideas. And there may be some ideas that we will want to incorporate into the selected contractor that would have to be negotiated. Another thing that will have to be resolved is the project labor agreement. There are also some options on Sepulveda aerial structure as well as elimination of parking at Westwood. So all of those will have to be negotiated before we have a contract award. Our goal is to in February, select the contractor providing the best value, enter into those negotiations, and hopefully conclude those within 30 days and be able to come back with a recommendation for contract award at the March board meeting.
Okay, we've just been joined by Director Parks. How are you going to do that evaluation on your technical value,
best value? The evaluation process, and we've used this successfully on many contracts, is designed so that not one single person can affect the outcome of the selection process. So we have an evaluation committee, and that evaluation committee is broken up into various parts. There's a technical committee that evaluates it, and then there is a committee that evaluates just the price portion and not the technical portion. Then there's an overall leader, which we call the evaluation chair, Tom Stone. He has actually done several of our, assisted us in the selection process on several occasions. So we utilize basically staff from Expo staff, Metro's operations staff, and some engineers from Metro. We're utilizing staff from the City of L.A., the City of Santa Monica, and then to round it all out, we have two individuals from outside agencies outside of Los Angeles that have done light rail projects before. So we have a very diverse group. Within the technical evaluation, only certain people will be assigned certain portions to evaluate the technical. So not everybody on that team evaluates all of the technical. So that's how we get the independent aspect where no one person or group of people can skew the evaluation process.
Okay, thank you. We've been joined by Director O'Connor. Other questions or concerns? Anyway, we thank you for this update. Madam Secretary, that brings us to the next update.
7B, project status update.
I'll turn this over to Eric.
Starting with phase one, some of our latest construction photos. This shows some of the street reconstruction that's gone down on Flower Street. We did a lot of street reconstruction this last month on Flower Street. This is looking at some of the final track alignment coming off of the La Brea aerial structure. We continue to make progress on the La Cienega parking structure. This is down installing some of the footing rebar down at the bottom of the structure itself. We've excavated down, and so now you'll start seeing it come up out of the ground. This is looking at sound wall, OCS, and ballasted track installation coming up to the Venice Roberts Center at the Culver City Station. Major issues, substantial completion still is being estimated in June of this year. That doesn't exclude the La Siena parking structure, the storage facility, or the Farmdale station. Those will follow shortly thereafter. There's other areas that could affect the schedule that we continue to monitor. Ventilation system in the trench, tie-in, automatic train protection. We continue to work very closely with LADOT to finalize the traffic designs and the controller programming, and then the storage facility. The project budget, we're still within budget. We've executed approximately $503 million in construction contract packages and change orders, which is within the $570 million in construction allowance and contingencies. There's still outstanding risk elements that we've discussed at previous board meetings. Includes a storage facility, which we're currently working to rescope with Metro and the city. Farmdale Station, as Thorpe mentioned, we anticipate getting bids in the end of this month. So hopefully that will begin to minimize some of the risk associated with that once we have that price in. We have remaining work in Culver City. Construction costs due to progression between 85 and 100, and then any other unforeseen different site conditions. In recognition of some of the budget issues, we continue to work with third parties on reimbursements for project costs. We're implementing the value engineering proposals that were approved by the board, and then we're also continuing to work to identify other cost savings measures in the project itself, and looking at bidding alternatives also to reduce the costs. Phase two, I'll be brief on this. I think Mr. Thorpe covered pretty much all of that as part of his presentation. I think the main things, we're still working closely with third parties. We're working closely with Metro now to finalize the funding agreement for the project, and also working very closely with the City of Santa Monica to finalize our master cooperative agreement. So activities going on in parallel with selecting our design-build contractor. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you.
If I might.
Yes.
The work seems to be going pretty well in Culver City. Is there much chance that it's going to be completed earlier than we expected?
There is a chance that could occur. The contractor is ahead of schedule at this point. One of the things that we're working with that contractor on now is the final aspects. What's not in his contract yet is the overhead power system as well as the train control system, and we're working to finalize those arrangements. Once we know that, we'll have a much better idea of when we can open up. Yes, it's going to be, I believe, not... It won't take the 12 months that we originally passed initial phase one opening, so I think we're going to be able to open up sooner. It still will be sometime in 2012, though.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we can move on to the next update.
Item 7C, local jobs and DBE program update.
Afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board.
Good afternoon.
Robert Long, project manager for FFP. Our hours for this month, the month of November 27th through December 25th, FFP hours were 19,662 with 9,017 local for a total of 45.9%. Our subcontractors were 26,800 with 6,636 local for 24.8%. Combined for the month, we had 46,463 man hours, 15,654 were local for 33.7% for the month. That brings our cumulative to dates of about 34% for FFP, 23.4% for subs, overall combined total to date of 28.3. From a man-hour perspective, or a man-count perspective, FFP only hired one new worker in the last month. He was not a local. Our subcontractors had 111. 33 of them were local for 29.7%. So the combined total is 112 new hires, with 33 being local for 29.4%. Brings our totals to date 32.5% for FFP, 16.8% for our subcontractors, which is a total of 19.3 by man count. And our last slide is our current DBE achievements and goals. To date on our design services, we're at 24.79%, which is tracking very closely with our projection of 24.58. Our professional services are at 29.64. Our projection there is 30.4%. And our construction to date is 18.12, with our actual forecast being around 17.47. And our overall totals would be 20.2% to date, and we're projecting about 19.4%. Any questions?
Hearing and seeing none, I'll thank you for that update as well. Madam Secretary?
Item 7D, Inspector General Report.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Karen Gorman from the Office of the Inspector General at Metro. I was asked at the last board meeting to look into the backgrounds and circumstances concerning some news reports that some of our board members had found in the news that were of some concern. They wanted the CEO and the Inspector General's office both to coordinate that effort and look into the backgrounds of what was going on with that situation. So we did look into that, those news reports. To be fair, we looked into the backgrounds of both of the current bidders for the Phase 2 project, and we did find some information that was reported in the news. We did give both of these bidders the opportunity to come and speak to us to inform us of anything that they thought we should be aware of and consider with respect to these news reports. And we've provided some of that information in our report to you today as to a few of those things that were in the news, at least more recent things that were reported in the news concerning these couple of companies. As a result, we've made a couple of recommendations. These may be obvious already to, certainly the CEO is probably already doing these things and we're stating the obvious, but we recommended that because the previous, any review of responsibility as opposed to responsiveness in an RFP may have been done over a year ago concerning the previous preliminary engineering work, and some of these things that we found were more recently reported in the news that wouldn't have been considered at that last review, that they do an updated review at this time as they review the bids that have recently come into the agency to do an updated responsibility review. And if the source selection team needs any assistance from the Office of Inspector General to perform any additional review or background investigations, we'd be happy to try and help them to the extent that they will request that information from us. We'll also give them a list of the information that we've found thus far and any documentation that supports those reports that we've received so that the team can evaluate that, and we'll submit that to Mr. Thorpe in the next couple of weeks as soon as we can pull all the final documentation together as quickly as possible. Based on the deadlines that he will communicate to me that he needs. We further suggested that they do some reference checks, that typically in bid responses, a bidder may submit information about all the wonderful projects that they've worked upon. However, they may not indicate if they've had any difficulties or disputes concerning any of those projects. So it would be a normal thing for a source selection team to double-check on the satisfaction of previous customers, like you would do with any bidder you might deal with, to confirm that the previous customers they recently dealt with have satisfactory interaction with those bidders. And we recommended that we be provided the names of the source selection team members so that we can do a conflicts check for those individuals. This is a relatively common standard practice that we do at MTA. We don't do it on every contract by any means because I'd have to have a staff of 50 people to do that, but we do it on big projects, sensitive projects, things that the procurement department decides should come to us. And we do maybe 10 or 15 a year of those kinds of reviews. And we also look at probably several a week of the ethics certifications that the bidder fills out at Metro, and I don't know that they have a similar document at Expo, that the bidder discloses at Expo, at Metro, if they've given gifts or campaign contributions or have family members who work at Metro and those sorts of things, and if there's any information indicated on those certifications that would require us to do a conflicts check, then we'll do that then as well as indicated. And so we would offer to provide that service as well to Expo. And at the board's suggestion a couple of meetings ago that the Gold Line also be provided services by us, I've also made that offer, extended that same offer to them to provide those same sorts of services. So that's what we have for you today, and so the next step would be for us to provide that information to Mr. Thorpe for his utilization. If he would like us to walk through the information with the source selection team or with him, we're happy to do that as well. And if he needs additional assistance from us, we're willing to do that. I want to also state that obviously any contractor who is a big contractor, does a lot of work, is going to have things reported in the newspaper about them. They're going to have had disputes with customers before, and there's going to be issues. So we don't expect to find a contractor to deal with who's never had any such thing reported about them. And in fact, even MTA's had something reported about them on occasion that we may have disagreed with in the news. So you can't always believe every word that you read as well. But I was also taught early on when I came to work at Metro by some of the great board deputies like Smith, Bricker, and like Bulky, that I should not have my board surprised by not giving them all the possible information that I could. And so in that spirit, we're providing this information at this time.
Director Perry for questions.
That's weird. Okay, there it is. I wanted to ask the IG a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Went through a very interesting, maybe not similar factually, but question of non-responsible and non-responsibility and how a company is deemed that. And I completely understand and agree with you about the issues that all contractors face, especially in larger, more complex projects. So, you know, I don't want to take this out of context. But just from a process standpoint, is there anything that we should change in our own procedures so that we as an authority might have been made aware of the designation to be applied, which I guess in the marketplace can be very damning, so that we could at least have discussed that on the record instead of finding it out in the newspaper? Is there something we should change here in terms of notification to directors or members of this authority so that we might at least be made aware of sooner rather than having to find out after the fact?
Right. Well, I think this process that we're talking about today, mm-hmm. of having us do this review, work with management at Expo, is in fact a step in that direction that will help you ferret those things out so that a year from now you're not facing these things, and you could have asked us a year ago to figure this out, and we didn't. So this is a step in that direction already. And beyond that, I have been having discussions with Mr. Thorpe about how we can do some reviews in Expo to help them evaluate just that sort of thing.
Do you think we can incorporate as part of that notification to the authority that review is to be commenced, or notification of intention to review, at least so that we can track it and have it reported on the agenda?
Sure.
Because I think we need to at least document the record so that we're on notice, too, because ultimately it's our responsibility to be able to either affirm it, deny it, defend it, or whatever. So I think at least documenting that process, and it could be, again, notice and then I don't know what our counsel would have, our legal counsel would have to say about that, but that we can have, I guess we have to take it on a case-by-case basis as to whether or not we can discuss it, but at least we can note it, notify it, note it, and put it on an as an agenda item, and then decide whether it's closed session or not based on our legal advice.
Understood. Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
Okay. If everybody's in a, I don't know, do I need to do a motion on that? Okay. Mr. Attorney, do I need to? Okay. I'd like to incorporate that. Trying to learn from the experiences that we have in our own counsel and apply them in other situations. And this is something I gleaned last week.
And I think this is a great process to be working on now. I know that just in October at the City of Los Angeles, Controller Gruhl came out with an audit of LAUSD, and she indicated that they weren't doing some of these things in their procurement process and criticized them a little bit for that. And so we're ahead of that eight ball by doing that here now and doing those sorts of things in this kind of process. So.
Yeah, and I just think because we have that level, we as elected and appointed have that additional measure of accountability to the taxpayer and to the public. And so I for one, and I guess everybody agrees, that I would like to have notification. There's an intent to review so that if we have questions, we have the opportunity to know that it is about to commence and why. Because ultimately, you know, obviously it could result in some kind of liability.
Yes, sir.
Okay, any more questions for the Inspector General? Seeing none, thank you very
thank
much,
you.
And I think I'm going to meet with you in a few days, so I look forward
yes,
to
sir.
That.
Yes,
okay.
Sir, thank you.
All right, Madam Secretary.
Item 8, CEO comments.
You want to reserve those? Okay. I thought you might. Do we have any comments from members? Mr. Parks.
I just would like to know, on new covers, I think 7... A, we're going to get back recommendations. The one question I asked several weeks ago about this issue of the how we count people that are local hires can be part of that report. You come back.
Part of the selection process, as we reported at the last meeting, is our SBE program. Mm-hmm. We were able, through very similar to what the county has done, adopted a process where we will give bonus points on the technical side and the selection of a contractor for proposing a local business goal.
Okay. I think the point I was asking a while back, we were discussing it was an item. And I think one of the draft contracts that said we didn't count people that were from out of area.
Oh, that's right.
As part of the
out of state.
Out of state.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering,
okay.
Did we resolve that? Because I think the last I remember, we were going to check with city and other legal authorities and give us some input. So I'm just wondering, does that come back when you bring us 7A?
Well, we actually did that, and I defer to legal counsel on.
We did, and what we discovered was that in those other programs, the same method of counting was used. That is, that out-of-state applicants were not considered in order to avoid the constitutional issues that we had identified.
No matter what the source of funding?
That's correct.
Well, that's different than we understood. Okay, thank you.
Okay. At this point, I think we go into closed session.
Sir?
Yes.
Has there been a motion to adopt the Inspector General's recommendations on 7D, or how are they being handled?
Well, the Inspector General's report was basically a presentation. I don't know if it was an action item.
Yeah, it's a receive and file.
Yeah.
Should we, she has made 4 specific recommendations. Should we as a board respond to those?
I'm fine with that.
I think we can just have the chair direct staff to.
We'll be so directed.
Thank you.
Okay, no problem. Mr. Attorney?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do have closed session. Item 10A is a conference with legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation under Government Code 54956.9, subdivisions B and C, one matter. We also have a conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation under 54956.9, subdivision A, the matter listed in the agenda. We do not anticipate reportable action.
Okay, Ms. Perry makes a motion that we bring in one staff member
per director.
Per director.